Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, welcome to the Bechdel cast. I'm Jamie Loftus.
I'm Caitlin Durante.
And we're your hosts.
We are.
That's true.
That was really close.
Yeah.
Close to what? Being
to what the normal intro.
Oh, yeah.
I think you usually say, you know, I'm your... usually you say, I'm your first host, and then I have to say, I'm your second host, and that makes me feel bad. That's happened at least twice.
I don't say...
I'm
projecting.
Other host.
Yeah, that's what happens. Yeah. I just say, I'm your host, Caitlin, and then you say, I'm your other host.
I get really insecure at the top of every episode and then dial back for the remainder of the episode. Be like, you're too hard on yourself. You're great.
Hopefully that doesn't happen this time around. Jamie, you're great, and I like you so much.
I just wish people would tell me that all the time.
I'll text you at least once a day with those.
Thank you. Set a reminder.
Yeah.
Everyone close to me has a reminder set.
Well, just to give you an idea of what this podcast is about, if you haven't listened to any other episodes, which you should do, but if you haven't, we talk about the portrayal of female characters in movies.
Yeah. And going off the Bechdel, that's Alison Bechdel.
Yeah. She has a test. And we rate
up the test.
Look it up, guys. Just
look
once.
Up.
There's a
the
whole
test.
Internet out there with information.
I like that when we say look up the test long enough to have actually explained the test.
I know.
I'll get there. Get there.
We will. And
we will.
Let's not stall any longer.
No.
How about we introduce our guest this week?
Oh, I'm excited. Yeah.
She is a comedian and a very funny person. Riley Silverman.
Hey. Hello, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
I'm a comedian and a very funny person.
Yes.
Right.
Because sometimes those two things are not
mutually exclusive.
That is true. That is very true.
I know a lot of comedians who are not funny, and I know a lot of funny people who are not comedians. So
but I am both.
You are both.
All right.
Congratulations.
I'll take that.
A rarity. A true rarity. Because sometimes you're just
a comedian. Double threat.
Exactly. Like sometimes you're just a comedian and a sociopath, but you're not funny.
Right.
Yeah.
That happens a lot.
In today's movie, actually.
It's true.
We'll get to.
It's true. I was foreshadowing.
Yes. Good job.
I wasn't subtweeting.
And speaking of that movie, we are talking about Tim Burton's Batman from 1989.
Yeah.
Riley, when was the first time you saw this movie, or what's like your relationship to this movie?
I have a weird, complicated history of this movie because I did see it when it came out because people thought I was a boy and I was a nerd, and so like a superhero movie coming out was like right up my alley. Like it was huge,
yeah.
And I was obsessed with Batman at that point in time, and I, you know, because that's what was there. And I at that point, my only real major experience with Batman had been the 1966 TV series, which is like so campy and ridiculous
over
the top.
Kapow.
Yeah, and so. then I had a few comics and stuff like that, but like not a lot. And I remember this movie came out, and then also I was struggling with my gender identity, and there was a Cracked magazine parody of Batman that was like, because I did the movie comic parody every time a movie would come out, because Batman was everywhere. And there is a scene in this movie where Vicki Vale gets let into the Batcave, and like we'll talk about that more later, I'm sure. But like in the comic, they kind of slim that down a little bit, and they just had Bruce kind of like come out to Vicky as being Batman, which is a scene in the movie as well, but doesn't happen. But in the comic, he like steps out and he's in the bat suit, and he's like, I have something to tell you or whatever. And she's like, oh, you're a transvestite. And like, I am a transgender woman. I'm not a transvestite. It's not a word that I use anymore, but it was the very first word that I ever heard to describe anyone of like a variant gender identity. So it's like this weird thing. And I remember I had a babysitter and I was reading this Cracked comic, and I remember asking my babysitter, like, what is it? What does transvestite mean? And she was like, oh, it's a term for like men who dress up like women because they want to be women. And I said, oh, that's what I am. Like, that's like a thing that happened in like my childhood. And I remember like freaking out my babysitter, like, you can't tell your parents I told you what that means. Like, you just gotta be like, she didn't know, because she's a teenager who's like just being paid like a couple bucks an hour to watch HBO at my house.
Yeah. Right?
But yeah, that's like, so Batman has always been this weird like tie-in to my coming out. And I was talking to Caitlin off mic before you got here, Jamie, about how there's also an episode of the Batman animated series where Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn have like a girls' night out in the town. And like, I remember that being like my first femme slash.
Like
I've been obsessed with that episode ever since. And it's like my like first, like in my like baby Riley queer girl, like lesbian pair, like fanfic in my head. And it's actually now in the comics a little, they actually kind of made it canon. Those two are a couple. And it's like my, like someone just like channeled my childhood into pages and like made it a thing.
I love it.
Yeah.
Everything is connected. I used to, do you have like cartoons that you wanted to make out when you were younger?
Nothing comes to mind, but
I think you're lying.
I wish I had something to say.
What kind of a nerd are you that you don't have cartoon makeout fantasies?
I know.
That was ironic, actually. I was not actually calling you a nerd. I hope you.
Pickles and Angelica. They're cousins.
The thing is, here's the thing. I didn't watch that many cartoons as a kid because, well, one, we didn't have cable. I didn't have cable growing up, so I didn't have like Nickelodeon or Disney or anything like that. I did watch Gargoyles a lot.
That was pretty good.
But I don't remember watching that many cartoons. I was like, I don't even know what I watched. I watched the movies that I still love now.
Right.
Like Indiana Jones and Back to the Future. I wasn't watching a bunch of kid cartoons, and I think that's why I hate children. And I
feel like it's a mix of all those
directed
things
toward children, because I just never watched.
Yes, because if there's anything that's not directed toward children, it's Indiana Jones and Back to the Future.
Yes.
Those are definitely
children
not.
Hate
yes, but those are
kids
things
hate time those travel and adventure
no,
so
grown-ups
much.
Only.
No, I'm saying, well, those are things that
I just watch like Star Wars and
grown-up stuff.
Yeah,
exactly.
Really serious
grown-ups
things.
Can enjoy those things also. I'm just saying, I didn't watch things that were only for a children audience.
That's fair.
Mine were Doug and Skeeter.
Aww.
Oh, from nice.
Doug.
I actually did watch that
them,
show.
My boys,
some.
I wanted them to be together. That's what I wanted. Really bad. I can like summon what I used to think about. Just them kissing on a bench, like a very specific bench. And they were listening to The Beats, which is the band from Doug.
Is Doug in his Quail Man outfit like is like a kinky thing?
Oh, that would be tight. Nice. That would be like an episode of my.
Because he wore like underwear on the outside of his pants,
yeah,
right?
And a so belt on his forehead.
He's like, put your hand on my underwear, and he's like, which pair?
it's great. It's now I've got to go home and watch it. Yeah. If anyone listening to the podcast wants to draw me some Doug and Skeeter scissoring, I can do it myself.
There's gotta be a Doug. I'm gonna look up. I bet there's gotta be Doug and Skeeter fan.
Like they're perfect. They complement each other in every way. That's why they're best friends.
Yeah.
And like they've got different body types, but not like too. Like I'm just like,
well, Skeeter has that very long,
he's
phallic nose.
He does
right?
have like just a
just like dick
a
nose.
Dick nose.
I didn't realize until like years later that like the idea was supposed to be kind of be that like they were supposed to be like the interracial thing, like the Skeeter supposed to be like, right. like a person of color because he's drawn green. Like I didn't get that until
that whole years later. Like any, it's weird because Doug is white, his mm-hmm. whole family is white, and then the rest of the characters are just like various colors.
Right? Because Patty Mayonnaise orangish.
She was. Orange-ish,
with, like, yellow hair.
Oh, so maybe he wasn't supposed to be that, and I just embrace this now. Like, well, he was different colors.
I think
so.
You're right, though. And then Roger, the bully, was, like, neon green.
Well, that's the thing. I can't find anything of Skeeter and Doug together, but I'm finding a whole lot of Doug and Roger stuff.
Like, Doug
I'm
and Roger?
So much Doug
Show
and Roger
me.
Stuff.
Oh, my God.
This is, like, a very tender one. This one's very sweet.
They're so in love.
Well, this episode is now about Doug and no longer about Batman.
I can't believe that there's no Doug and Skeeter.
I bet there is somewhere deep
down. Well, you
got to
draw it.
That was a cursory glance.
Jamie does animations. What do you call
them? I have like a series of people I would like to see scissor.
You should
put in Doug and Skeeter.
So how much do I have to pay you for...
Dude, honestly, I just do it for freezies. It's just fun for me to do.
I have the... Batman animated series, Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn, and I actually the Funko Pops.
Really?
And when I got them, I actually like posed them like they were kissing and took a picture of it.
Yes.
35 years old.
Yes.
And I'm giggling. I'm literally giggling. And oh my god. But like I just thought it was so funny, like ridiculous. Like, oh my
it's
god,
so
this
much
is like
fun.
I'm sending a letter back to my childhood.
Oh, my favorite one I made is for okay, and then I promise we'll talk about Batman, Kayla. I promise.
I'm trying to bring it to Batman. I'm just not bringing it to Batman the movie.
I'm actively bringing it away over and over. My favorite scissoring one that I would direct everyone to is young Henry Kissinger and old Henry Kissinger.
Oh, I think I remember that one.
Scissoring.
Yeah.
That was a custom one for Josh Androsky.
That sounds about right.
And yeah, because that's what he would want.
Sure.
It's what he'd want.
Well, look, is it like on, where can people find it?
I'll post it on our Twitter account.
Oh, great.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
Jamie, what is your history with this movie? Had you seen it before?
Guess.
No,
I watched it today.
Yeah.
As with every movie we've ever done, I watched it today. I liked it. I thought it was great. Yeah, it's so much fun. It felt like July when I was watching it.
It
was a summer movie.
I am baffled.
Did you watch the right movie?
It
was, well.
And did not like Mad Max Fury Road. My brain is imploding
stand
in on itself.
Mad Max Fury Road. I'm triggered. Don't talk about Mad Max Fury Road.
I'll never bring it up again. But I did notice.
I loved Batman.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, we will talk about it because. So I saw this movie for the first time. I think I was in college. I was probably like 19 or 20, which is about 10 years ago. Because I'm not afraid to reveal my age. Yeah, I'm an aging woman in Hollywood. So what?
Whoa.
Sorry, I don't know why I started yelling. But. I saw it.
Calm down.
I know.
Your age can't get so upset about things like that.
No, I'm just getting so emotional because of all of my hormones just going haywire because I'm reaching menopause or whatever. I don't know. Anyway,
what is aging? How does it work?
Time is a construct and life is meaningless. Anywho.
Let's leave.
I drove in traffic to get there. From
I know we do. No, life has meaning, and so does this podcast. So I've seen this movie probably four times, and each time I watch it, I like it less and less.
Well, that said, it's not a good movie for women, certainly.
Certainly not.
No.
It was a fun movie. Yeah. I like it.
I remember liking it when I was a kid, just because, like, oh, it's Batman. Like, it literally could have been Batman, like fighting City Hall over, like, some sort of parking ticket. But if it was Batman, I'd be like, oh, yeah, Batman's in a movie and doing stuff. Like, I don't think that I got any of what is actually happening in this movie when I was a kid. And then I probably watched it a couple times when I was, like, a teenager, but not in a long time.
Yeah.
And I was, like, not prepared for how much of it. I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this movie.
I think what happened
for
me...
It's so weird, but I'm on board. I like it.
I mean, I liked it at the time, and it's still not bad. I mean, I have it on DVD, so I liked it enough to buy it. But I think what happened for me is that I saw Christopher Nolan's trilogy, and especially Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. I just like those movies
they're
so
great.
Much more than...
Not everyone agrees with that. I think they're fantastic.
Yeah.
I love them.
They're good.
I like the Joel Schumacher ones.
Oh, God. Also, but you've seen those ones and not Tim Burton's Batman?
I know.
Oh, my God.
Okay, but the thing is, I love Joel Schumacher. Like, when I was growing up, if anyone was
he's one of the worst
who's
directors.
Your favorite director? I'd be like, I'm a Schumacher head.
Oh, man.
Phantom of the Opera 2004, Gerard Butler.
Did he direct that?
Yeah. Oh.
Yes, he did. Of course he did.
I want to get on board with you like in Schumacher, but you keep saying movies that should not argue for that.
No. So. Joel Schumacher has directed only bad movies that I have enjoyed all of.
That's like if somebody was like, oh, I like In Night Shyamalan. Oh, what do you love? Oh, I love The Happening. Like,
oh,
that's
he made The Lost Boys.
Yeah, that's a movie that if you had said that, I would not have made fun of you for it. But you picked
He also
the
made
Phantom
Phone Booth.
I like Phone Booth.
He made
Phone Booth is great.
Flatliners. I like Flatliners.
Yeah, these are movies that, yes, if you had said these
Did
movies.
He make...
The Phantom of the Opera is his best movie.
No, it's not. It is
he
not.
Had a guitar solo even... to Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh, my God.
That's fun. Also, Patrick Wilson in anything.
To be fair, I think Phantom itself is like an overrated show, and so like the movie also is like it's like takes the it like somehow took a show that gets really boring about halfway through it and made it even more boring somehow.
It is. I mean, it is a boring show. I'm very attached to it because I used to sneak out of my house and then put on like goth clothes and go see the Phantom of the Opera.
Actually, what I'm getting from this, you're like a Phantom of the Opera and Batman, is you love movies that people have been horribly disfigured in the face. Like, that is your thing.
I love a fucked up face.
Then you should have loved Fury Road.
I should have. But it was the most boring movie I've ever seen in my life.
All right.
I was saying off mic, but I do like... Batman and Robin is a bad movie that is badly made and badly acted, except for Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy. And she just, like, knocks it out of the park to the point where she's like...
That.
She's like... I think there's a lot of people in movies that are always, like... very aware of the movie they're in when everyone else isn't, and I feel like she's a good example of that. The most famous one everyone thinks of is Junior Gershon in Showgirls. Like, she just knows exactly what she's doing there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, even speaking of Batman, the newest, the Batman versus Superman movie, a lot of people didn't like Jesse Eisenberg, but I loved him because I feel like he's the only one who came to set every day and was like, we're literally making a movie called Batman versus Superman. I'm not going to tone it down at all, ever, the entire movie.
I didn't see it.
Neither did I.
He was Lex Luthor in that?
Yeah.
Got it. I've got a picture pulled up here of... an almost shirtless Joel Schumacher.
Oh, gross.
That's his Wikipedia picture. It's how he would have wanted it. He's still alive.
I'm going to just keep this
yeah, sorry.
Episode on track as best I can.
I'm as bad as Jamie. I'm like...
Here's the thing.
It's just hard to talk about Batman because Batman is so, like, it's such a far-reaching thing. It's not just, like, one movie, but it is, yeah, this movie
yes.
is, the movie itself deserves to be talked about.
So the tricky thing about an episode like this is we are... basically isolating Batman to this one movie. And like I was saying before, I'm not super familiar with any of the comic books or everything I know about Batman. I know from the like 7 Batman movies that I've seen. So sorry to all you Batman super fans. I'll probably get some things wrong about stuff, but...
And also grow up.
Grow up.
Well, also, like, I'm not even, I mean, I'm just getting back into comics after a very long hiatus, but it feels like DC resets their continuity on a pretty regular basis. So I feel like
so.
Even if someone's like, that's not how things worked. Well, it's like, okay, well, what decade are you talking about? Because a lot of things change over time.
Oh,
so.
I like
well, good.
That.
Hey,
I like some wiggle
that
room.
That makes it easy for us.
Retcon.
As per usual, I will give a very terrible recap of the story. At no one's request.
And as usual, I will interrupt it a lot.
I can't wait.
Okay.
So...
I will sit silently and say nothing.
But... No, you can contribute.
Okay, I was going to. Yeah. I hope you know that's going to happen.
I love interrupting.
I wrote a really fast... This is going to go really fast.
Okay.
Okay, so there's a Batman, but we
okay.
aren't sure if
okay.
he's real. They're like, oh.
There's a Batman.
There's
okay.
a Batman, but we don't know if he's real or not. And the bad guys are kind of scared of him, but kind of not. And then he's like, no, it's me. I am Batman. Tell all your friends. And meanwhile, they're in the city of Gotham. And Gotham City.
Got it.
And all the politicians are trying to crack down on crime.
Are they all white guys?
They're a bunch of white guys.
No, one of them is not a white guy.
Oh,
Harvey Dent is Billy Dee Williams.
He turns white for Batman Forever, but he is a black man in this film.
Yes. So, hey, good for them.
Lando Calrissian.
Yes.
District attorney.
They're trying to crack down on crime and specifically go after this mob boss named Grissom. And he has this right-hand man named Jack Napier, But he's trying to get rid of Jack because they're like effing the same woman. So they go to this like chemical plant and Jack falls into this vat of acid.
There's like a corrupt cop who's working for Grissom who like tries to kill Jack, and then Batman drops Jack.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he becomes the Joker because his skin gets all bleached and his hair turns green. And now he has a different personality.
That's what
and
I
he has nerve damage on his face that puts him in a perpetual crazy grin.
Yeah. So now he's the Joker. And then there's also this lady named Vicky Vale, and she's like, yo, I'm a photographer. I'm trying to snap some photos of Batman. So, hey, journalist friend named Knox, let's try to win a Pulitzer Prize. Oh, that guy annoys the hell out of me. And then she starts dating Bruce Wayne. And then other stuff happens. That's pretty much like the first act. Then the Joker's like, I'm bad. And Batman's like, no, I'm going to get you. And then they.
And Joker's like, Vicky Vale's hot.
Yeah.
And that's one thing. Like, Joker's like, Vicky Vale, I know you're like a photographer and you're famous, but you're like hot and I want to have you.
I love that scene where he first sees a picture of her and he calls her a beast.
Yeah.
He's like, this kind of beast can't just be walking around. I was like, oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Wait, who calls?
The Joker calls Kim Basinger. Well, Vicky Vale.
Oh, like a little beast. But doesn't even precede it with a sexy adjective. He just straight up calls her a beast.
Yeah. Toward the end, he calls her a beast again whenever he's like, oh, this is fitting, Beauty and the Beast. But if anyone else calls you beast, I'll rip out their lungs. It was hilarious because he was trying to call himself Beauty. Hey, guys, listen to our Beauty and the Beast episode.
Whoa. That was a fun one. Wow. That's the only movie I saw.
Yeah.
We've done, what, like 10 episodes now? I've seen one movie with Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, the Joker's plot that he's doing is he has hidden these chemicals in cosmetics around the city that, when they're combined, make a person laugh themselves to death.
And also get the same nerve damage that he got in his face by being cut. But somehow they're all, it's the chemical Smilex.
But he also thinks it's like an art project.
Yeah.
He thinks he's an artist.
He's Banksy.
I like the scene where he throws paint on the other art and dances.
Yeah. Yeah.
Prince.
I remember as a kid loving that scene. Good. Like, I remember I remember thinking it was so much fun. And I love the idea of like going to an art gallery and ruining people's work.
I loved it today.
Yeah.
It's like, what if you and your friends just like went with your own song and just ruined priceless art?
He loves causing havoc to music. Like, that's his whole thing in this movie. Like, there's a scene early on when he kills Grissom, Jack Palance's character. He like suddenly there's like circus music playing and he's like firing his gun, but like he's both shooting directly at him but also at every other inch of the room, just like, and it's like dancing
around.
He does not
throw
the
gun over his shoulder. So that's the story. Hey, that one was pretty quick. I managed to get it out.
I thought Jack Palance was Martin Sheen for a while.
I see the resemblance.
Like, because I was almost like, because I'm like weirdly horny for Martin Sheen. I was like, oh, but then it was Jack Palance.
And you're like, God damn it.
And I was like,
I wanted the president, not the guy from City Slickers.
Exactly. I wanted President Bartlett.
I don't want a guy who's going to read Marissa Tomei's name at the Academy Awards.
No.
I don't
want Charlie Sheen's daddy-o.
I think of him as Emilio Estevez's dad.
I
want to
be their stepmom.
Oh, that would be cute.
That would be such a good mommy to them.
Hey, Charlie. Hey, Emilio. There's another. I think there's at least one other brother who's very. Oh, no. I think Martin Sheen has a.
Okay.
I don't know. It doesn't
look up the family tree.
I always mix up Martin Sheen. When I was younger, I don't do so much more, but Martin Sheen and. Why am I blanking on him? The guy who's married to. Captain Zeta-Jones.
Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas. For some reason, as a kid, I always have to get confused because I think they had the same haircut, and like I just knew they're old white guys
they're
in movies.
They're old.
I mean, Douglas is way younger than Martin Sheen, but they played the same kind of basic role, but they were different ages.
Michael Keaton and Michael Douglas are not the same man.
True. Although
this
I
really
think Michael Keaton
the new.
Yeah.
This the whole movie
real name
experience.
Is Michael Douglas, but he couldn't take that. Like, SAG made him change it.
What else is Michael Keaton in? I'm having a pain.
Wait, Michael Keaton's last name is Douglas?
I think so in real life.
For some reason, in my mind, I always just thought he was like Buster Keaton's grandson or something.
Oh.
But I can be totally wrong. In my head, I always assumed that and never looked it up.
I could be very wrong about the facts. Hey, fake news, everyone.
I have literally no facts to back up what I just said. I just always assumed that in my head.
I always assumed that Clea Duvall was Robert Duvall's daughter, and that is not. And to the point where I was like telling people, "Oh yeah, she's his daughter," and that's not true at all.
That's
Fake news.
Fake news, yeah. Baby.
Fake news. Fake.
Oh, so his other big thing before that was Mr. Mom and Beetlejuice.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
He's a
he was
famous,
a huge star this era,
and he's making a bit of a comeback, and
deservedly.
Yeah,
I've heard The Founder is great, but yeah, he was like a. And the thing about him being cast in Batman was it was kind of a very much like when Ben Affleck was cast. Everyone's like, "What? Why would you?" Because he's a comedian, and then he was like known for these ridiculous comedy roles, and then they're mm-hmm. casting him as Bruce Wayne in Batman. It was like the weirdest. It was like a very bizarre choice for the time period, but it mm-hmm. also goes. Tim Burton just seems to only be able to work with one actor repeatedly, and that's what happened. Like, oh, I like Tim Burton. I like Michael Keaton. No, now I like Johnny Depp. Okay, I'll keep casting him. Like,
right. There's something to be said for an aggressively good-looking man who insists on playing characters anyways. Like, that's... I'm just like, what strength of spirit you have?
Wait, are you saying that Michael Keaton is aggressively attractive?
Oh, no, but, like, I feel like he
or Johnny's
fell
gonna
into,
be either
like...
one of those two people.
I think Johnny Depp
in his prime, he was. I think, well, I mean, not only is he unattractive for his personal life issues as well, but he just became kind of a weird...
Yeah, he did not age.
Getting back to Joel Schumacher, I feel that way about Patrick Wilson in Phantom of the Opera. Patrick Wilson's a very handsome man, but, you know, in some movies he's getting his dick chopped off by a very young page boy haircut Ellen Page. And then the next year he's playing Raoul.
And
Hard Candy.
Yeah.
Love that movie.
Oh my gosh.
Anyways, I just wanted to talk about Patrick Wilson. Go back.
Well, it connects in that he's also a superhero in The Watchmen. So.
It's true. Yeah, he's a character.
He's Night Owl.
Wow.
He's a character.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Back to Batman.
Okay.
We've got...
Michael Keaton's attractive.
He's not hot. Unattractive, but I wouldn't. He's not conventional.
I think he was
attractive.
Considered attractive at the time. Like, I think he was like
Billy Crystal like fuzz hair not... that I like cannot get.
Everyone
behind.
In this movie has the same haircut, and it's confusing.
It must have been very humid on the set. Everyone's got everyone's a little frizzy. Well, it's also there's a gag about it later because when the Smilex toxin is in everything, the idea is like no one can use makeup or hair products because they're afraid they're going to be murdered by it, and so because they're airlifting in cosmetics from outside mm-hmm. the city, and the newscasters all have like horrible boils in their face. And, at least like the part where the newscasters are like on camera looking like hell, at least they did make the men and the women, and it wasn't like the guys look fine and the women,
because
like
that.
Right,
because I know I'm probably speaking out of turn at this point, but I noticed like I feel like women are the only ones who actually die from Smilex in the film, like unless I'm missing somebody, but I feel like every victim of Smilex is like a supermodel or a female newscaster.
The two models and then that newscaster woman who mm-hmm. dies, and those are the only like on screen deaths we see that are like very obviously they died. Speaking of those characters and other characters, like the main ones, the women that we have in this film, the main female character is Vicki Vale, played by Kim Basinger,
mm-hmm.
and Alicia Hunt, played by, I forget her name.
Jerry Hall.
Mm-hmm. And she's more of a secondary character. She doesn't get a ton of screen time.
Yeah.
Versus the main male characters, which are Bruce Wayne, a.k.a. Batman, Jack Napier, a.k.a. the Joker. And then the more secondary characters are Lieutenant Eckhart, Grissom, the mob boss, Commissioner Gordon, Harvey Dent, the reporter Knox, Alfred the servant man, and
the Joker's assistant guy. Like,
I think his name is Bob.
Yeah. And all the guys
Jack
who
and Bob.
Work for Grisham. Like, all the guy he murders with a hand buzzer.
This is an example of a movie where almost everyone on screen is a man.
Yeah.
Because, like, all of the cops are men. All of the bad guys are men. All of the journalists are men. Mm-hmm. So, like, it seems as though... anyone, at least with a job in Gotham City, is a man.
Yeah, the only women you do have the newscasters. There's two of them because one gets dead.
Yeah.
And the other one is also a lot of like old ladies in background shots. I noticed that. Like, I noticed like there's like a scene like in a department store or something. There's like a lot of like older like spinster ladies that are all doing their shopping or they are decent in having a lot of women in the crowd scenes. At least I think they were, but I could be totally wrong. But
and then Vicki Vale has a job.
She does.
She's doing a thing.
She's an established photographer.
Right.
In any case, all of the main characters who have like significant roles in the story, almost all of them are men. And the few women that we do have, well, one, look exactly alike. And they are
when I was a kid,
hot blonde ladies.
When I was a kid, the first time I saw it, I definitely got Vicki Vale and Alicia mixed up at first. Like, until I think until they're in the same scene together, I'm like, oh,
they
I thought that was the same
too
person.
Yeah, that was too confusing. I was like, one can't just have sort of curly hair and they're like the same very, very hot lady. And like, good for them.
Sure. Like, they are adapting this from source material that might have also featured mostly white dudes. But the nice thing about adaptations is that you can change things. If you want to update things and make them more or like include more types of people, you can do that.
And also, you really can't even give that one like even that like, oh, it's an adaptation argument, because Tim Burton, like, very famously did not really care about the comics and like didn't really read the comics.
Oh.
So he kind of made his own version of Batman and still did what he did.
Everyone a white dude.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, he made that the School for Unusual Children, like he had that comment that was like, the story doesn't really call for it. Why would I have it in there? And it's like, because you can just have people existing in the world. And
yeah.
No. Okay.
Like, where was I going? Oh, okay, here we go. The first time that we see Vicki Vale, the first time she is introduced, all we see are her legs.
Yep.
Because did you know that women are just a collection of their body parts?
Have you ever seen the Headless Women of Hollywood blog?
No.
It's wonderful. It's by a fabulous New York comic named Marsha Belsky.
She
aggregates all like the movie posters that are just women's body parts.
Oh.
It's amazing.
Like someone's butt to the camera
stuff.
And no face and like, yeah. Like
check
that
it
kind
out,
of thing.
Gang. She's great. And it's there's literally no like limit on the source material.
Yeah. It's a spectrum.
Everything.
Cool. So, yeah, we are introduced to her by her legs that are just propped up on the table. Knox goes, hello, legs. And then he says, oh, if you want to take nudes of me, you'll need a long lens, which is sexual harassment in the workplace,
yeah.
I would say.
Knox has almost no role in this movie except for to be a guy who objectifies Vicki and, like, is mad that she's dating Bruce Wayne. Like,
yeah.
His only job in the movie is to, like, criticize her choice of a boyfriend that's not him. Like, that's, like, because he's supposed to be, like, there's the implication that he's the reporter and she's the photographer, so she has to go to him to look things up because I can't work a computer. That's not how she talks, but that's very Harley Quinn, actually. But it's weird because, like, I know that in the comics, or, like, at least later, maybe after this movie, but they seem to have turned Vicki Vale into more, like, an investigative journalist as opposed to just a photographer.
Yeah.
Not that just is bad, but, like, she, but yeah, and so it's like, it does feel like they could have just gotten rid of his character entirely.
Right.
Because it's already like a love triangle, quote unquote. It's a horrible way to phrase it because the Joker loves her, quote, like, he desires her as an object.
Right.
And Bruce likes her. And so it's like this like weird, like, oh, these two men are after the same woman, even though one of them has made it clear she has no interest in one of them completely.
Yeah.
So having Robert Wool be like the fourth angle of this thing doesn't need to happen at all.
No,
like, completely...
no one loves Vicki in this movie.
Yeah.
Which is too bad.
Alfred might.
Oh, yeah. I'll make them scissoring.
But like, Platon.
Hey, it's like her grandpa.
Yeah.
Also just wanted to like throw in there. Long focus lens, that's not an accurate photography joke.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about photography.
You would use a long lens. I looked it up.
Oh.
But you can would. You also maybe argue that he's an idiot and just thinks he knows what he's talking about and is actually like making stuff up
he
as he goes?
He just wants to say, I've got a big old dick.
Yeah.
I looked
and
it up
and
brought
you to make a photo of it.
Broadcast News came out in 87, and I actually feel like this was just ripping off the Albert Brooks storyline from Broadcast News. Like, oh, we're going to have a kind of shitty Albert Brooks in this movie.
Oh.
Yeah, well, like you
Every
pointed
movie
out, I think like making her character more of like an investigative journalist would have been a better idea, because one, it makes her more active, because right now, basically, her role in the story is to be the love interest. Because did you know women can only be love interests in stories according to movies like this?
But a couple times she goes, chicka, chicka, and then they try to shoot her. I like laughed out loud at that part. I was like, the one time she's actually doing her job, they try to kill her.
Yeah, and it makes no sense why they try to kill her, because they're actually trying to take Batman's mask off and she's trying to take a picture of his face. And then they go, kill her. But it's like, wait, why?
And then he gets away.
You would want her to, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you think
she
they would
was
want
trying
him to
add something to the plot for once.
Yeah, once in a while, they try to imply that she does have like an investigative slant to her, but it's like always couched in she's trying to figure out this guy that she's dating, as opposed to just being like, oh, Bruce Wayne actually is kind of a weird dude and I should investigate him. It's always like, why didn't he call me, or why did he tell me he was going out of town when
I'm follow him around.
She like stalks him for a little bit.
Argue it's her job, but also it's like, you've got ulterior motives.
It's weird too in this movie because apparently nobody in Gotham remembers Bruce Wayne's parents being murdered, because like they like find articles about it and they go, oh, what a weird story that happened to this kid. Like, really? No one remembers that this super rich family was just gunned down in the street.
Also, at the beginning, no one knows what he looks like. Like, she's like, are you Bruce Wayne? And I like, he does look like almost every other guy in this movie, but like, I was like, he's like I thought he was a prominent figure
you would
in
think
the community.
That his picture would be in the paper or something.
They're at a party at his house and they don't know what he looks like.
It's
they're
very Gatsby.
And they're not like people from out of town. Like, that'd be one thing, but they're literally both working as for this newspaper in the city. Like, really, you don't know who a head socialite of your city is? Like, it'd be one thing, like in Batman Begins, the idea is like Bruce Wayne's been gone for a long time and is back in town, so that could even make sense. Like, oh, we know what he looks like. He's been gone for so long, like when he's a kid. But this is not the case. Like, and he's like charming. So he's not like a recluse. Like, he's somebody who has like galas at his house and has an art collection. And
my favorite part of Vicki Vale doing her job in this movie, but also still like being the love interest at the same time, is when after she gets those pictures, or like maybe gets those pictures and they shoot at her, she calls her editor and she's like, I have a scoop. And he's like, is it hot? And she's like laying on her bed. Yeah. She's like, it's real hot.
That's a weird scene too, because like that scene happens after Batman has saved her from the Joker attacking her at the art gallery, and she has some pictures of him, and then like he's like, there's one more thing I need from you, and then he like throws his arm up in the air. I'm like, did he just hit her, or did he gas her, like what happens? Then she wakes up on her bed the next day. So I'm like, is there like a deleted scene that we didn't see where they totally did it and then he like dropped her off, or did he just like knock her out and steal her camera?
She talks as if she's just come 45 times. She's like, it's real hot.
She takes that film and puts it like in, stuffs it in her bra.
Assume.
And so either way, he like reached down her shirt and stole. And she was probably, I'm guessing, unconscious, because she didn't know that it was gone until she woke up and then checked her boobs. And she's like, oh, the things that I store in here are missing.
Yeah. And she's like, only momentarily annoyed by it. Like, only momentarily that the man who was supposed to be the superhero knocked her out, felt her up, and stole her. Her film, and
then probably had a good reason.
And then she's like, still on board, like, oh yeah, we gotta call the police because he has a plan. Like, what? What? I don't know.
Yeah. I do want to point out that if Bruce Wayne / Batman did really want to do some good for Gotham City, he could probably just like spread his wealth around a little bit more and like eliminate a lot of the crime.
There's a comedian in San Francisco named Dash Kwiatkowski who basically has this whole thing about how like all Bruce Wayne has to do is open two factories and he could solve all the crime problems in Gotham.
He's like a billionaire, right? Like, spread the wealth, dude.
Yeah, he literally just has to give, like, take all the guys who are working as thugs for all these supervillains armies and just give them like 9-to-5 gigs with health insurance and they'd probably be fine.
But he's like mentally ill and so he makes up a very complicated... I read this very intense Batman theory where it's like the Batcave is... like Batman's actually in Arkham Asylum and it's like a Fight Club thing where he's Batman and the Joker.
Oh man.
And I was
I hate those things.
It was on this podcast with these like really drooly sounding men and they were just like, and then this, and he was insane the whole time. But also it's like, you know, if you're a guy just running around in a costume, any superhero movie, it's like, get over yourself.
Yeah, I hate any fan theory. It's like, this isn't really happening at all. Or like, these are all connected in the same universe. Everything is like that. Just like, I get it, you're clever.
Yeah, it's like, just go get a job.
Grow up. Grow up.
I have heard.
Our advice this episode, grow up.
Stop being a superhero and get a job.
Grow up.
Like, I know there was one version of the Joker at one point in the comics where like, when he thought Batman was dead, he just like gave up crime and started living a normal life because he no longer had Batman to like foil against. Like, that was...
So it's like, oh, Batman is the problem.
Yeah, well, that's definitely the argument in Batman Begins and Dark Knight, is that like, because Batman exists, like he helps escalate the crime problem. And then like, because he's there, like the criminals escalate as well.
He's
like,
tempting them.
Yeah, because like, Gordon has the whole thing, like, you got bulletproof vests and then they get armor-piercing guns and then you got a guy in a suit and then you got this guy in a clown costume. Like...
Yeah, they're always trying to top each other.
Yeah. But so in Batman 1989, yeah, it's just like there's always things I'm like, why is she just okay with this? Like, and that's, she's getting the better treatment, like as far as women in this film go. And that's not saying a lot. Like,
right.
Yeah. I couldn't believe, because I know like this wasn't the original movie that I had talked to you about, because I was going to, and then you're like, well, we should do this because of the timing and everything.
Oh, right. But, oh, by the way, we are doing this movie right now because the Lego Batman movie's coming out. Yeah. That's why I was like, hey, let's do Batman.
Yeah, yeah. And I
I'm so sorry.
Well, I remember like thinking that it was just going to be devoid of women. That was going to be the problem with it. And then when I started watching it, and I hadn't watched it in so long, I was like shocked at how much worse it is than that. Like, so we talked about Alicia, the woman that he basically like wins by stealing her from Grisham. Is that his name?
Yeah, Grissom.
Grissom. Like, he basically, like they're having an affair, and then that's why Grissom, like, kills him. But then he even acts, like, when he's killing Grissom, he, like, acts like, how dare you make a woman matter enough to kill me over? He literally, like, he says, yeah, like, you tried to kill me
over a woman.
Like, she's just so objectified. Yeah. And then because he, like, kills Grissom, he basically gets to, like, claim her as his.
And she
which
just
is...
rolls with
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Oh, she's let like, me play
oh,
my
I
game.
Now?
Yeah.
Did you know that you have to keep dating the side piece that you had been fucking before whenever he murders your mob boss boyfriend? Did you know? That's how you have to act when you're a woman.
That's the rule. I would love someone to kill someone else over me, but I'm extremely vain.
I'll kill someone for you, Jamie.
Thank you.
In her defense as a character, I think that's actually one of the more realistic things that happens in this movie, only because, but not in a good way, but like in a psychologically tormented person way. Like, she's terrified of what Jack is going to do to her and is like broken
and
because
that's
of
why she can't leave.
Like, she's
really
afraid to leave him. Yeah. Like, and I think it's like, he's not just like your standard like garden variety abuser. He's like literally a monster who's come back from the dead. So yeah.
Does she call him daddy at some point?
He calls himself daddy. He's yeah. like, daddy's
oh,
going
so
to go
worse.
Make some art.
So much yeah. worse. Okay, because I got confused because she was covered with the mask, so I wasn't even sure who she
yeah.
was.
Well,
yeah.
The mask comes off very briefly, and it's horrifying because you also
it's very
you
Joel
find
Schumacher
out that she, yeah,
the opera.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she starts singing Music of the Night, and then, yeah, so and that's like, when I was a kid, I don't think I really realized what happened to her face. Like, I remember she's wearing the mask and thinking, like, she had makeup on or, like, whatever. And then when I was leading up to it, I go, oh, I think he's, like, been hitting her or something. And then it's so much, like, she has this horrible scar that, like, he's clearly, like thrown acid on her face or something yeah. and, like, burned her. Like, he's really trying to, like, build up to making Two-Face or something. And he just, like, threw. And it's so jarring all of a sudden. I'm like, this is the movie that I watched when I was, like, 8.
Yeah.
And then the way he casually says, she jumped out a window.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you can't.
He's like carrying the broken mask around.
He's like, you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs.
Yeah.
What?
And he like only talks about her in like he talks about, he calls her like his masterpiece, like his piece of art that he makes. Like, he's so objectified her that like when she's dead, he's just like mad that his art is gone. Like,
yeah.
as opposed to, but and then like the movie doesn't even show her kill herself. Like, they don't even give her the like agency of having her own death on screen. It's literally just like
she
a guy
gets, like,
carrying her mask around, talking about her to the woman he's trying to bang now. Mm-hmm. Like,
just a sentence of like exposition of like, he literally says, he's like, oh, I'm going through a tough time right now.
Yeah.
She threw herself out a window.
Yeah.
It's like, aw. Tough day for you.
Oh, poor baby.
Baby.
Why didn't you tell me that earlier?
Here's a fun thing. The first time, or no, I think it's maybe the second time we see her character on screen, Alicia Hunt. She's carrying like 6 shopping bags. Because, you know, hey, did you know women be shopping? She's just, and then the next time we see her, she has other shopping bags.
Yeah.
She's just always out shopping,
and she like passes out because she thinks that Jack is dead, and he's like, hey baby, I'm home, whatever, and she's like, oh, passes yeah. out, like this ridiculous cartoonish thing.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Did you know that women faint all the time because we're delicate little flowers?
Where am I smelling salts? Dude, all that said, I do really enjoy Jack Nicholson in this movie. He's like, even though his part is as problematic as you can get, he does a great job.
He does a good job. And the other thing I really like about this movie is the score. It has
the
a great
amazing.
score.
Is it an elfman?
I mean,
it's an elfman.
An elfman and a prince. Like, there's a lot of prince in this movie.
There is a lot of prince. I played, guys, real quick brag. I feel like I mentioned I played the oboe in high school in almost every episode. But we played the theme from the 1989 Batman at our spring concert.
Oh, it's
one
a great
year.
Theme.
It's a great theme. And I had a little solo. And I fucked it up.
Oh, that's not where you thought it was going.
So if anyone's looking for an oboe player in the Los Angeles area, just shoot me an email.
It's funny. Still play?
Yeah, I got my oboe in my car right now.
Can you go get it and play that song for us?
Yeah.
I used to play the clarinet. We could be in a band together.
We should start a band.
I played trumpet, but I never actually learned how to play it. Mm. And I would just like sit. I would try to. I took lessons, but I never figured it out really. And I would like go to we'd have like recitals or like band concerts. And I would just sit and like pretend to be playing the trumpet because you couldn't tell because I was in the crowd anyway. Right. And then like my mom, like one day, like kind of figured out that I wasn't enjoying it. And she was like, but you sounded so good. And I'm like, I wasn't actually playing. I was just sitting there pretending to push on the buttons. And I think she was really annoyed because she spent money on the trumpet. And
it's a tricky.
I wanted to play drums and they just like kind of assigned you your section, and like I didn't want to just play any random instrument. I wanted to be a drummer.
They gave us instruments literally like the Sorting Hat. Like they would just be like, you know, if you were cute and a little girl, they'd be like, you play the flute, or if you're really cute, you play the piccolo.
What?
It was weird. Yeah, and then they were like, oboe girl, and which true, but also hurtful at the time.
So this movie's interesting. We're talking about the Joker. Like the Nicholson's performance, because I had always kind of in my head combined this Joker with like the Cesar Romero old Batman Joker as being a little bit less vile and a little bit more just like funny and weird and goofy. But boy, he is a sadistic, sociopathic monster. Mm-hmm. Like he is so much darker than I remember him being. And it's interesting because I actually even think he might be a little bit more dark than Heath Ledger's Joker, because Heath Ledger's Joker is a sociopath and he definitely has these like, I guess maybe he's pretty messed up because he does put that bomb in that guy's stomach and he also makes that like that boat try to kill half the people or whatever. But his thing is so much more psychological mind games and like this like agent of chaos. Whereas this Joker feels like he likes to personally inflict harm on specific people. And that is like so much creepier. And it's like I actually like researched a little bit for this podcast trying to figure out when that became the Joker, because that's, I feel like that's established as who he is now. Mm-hmm. Like I think the Jared Leto Joker was very much like that, and like they made him very abusive to Harley Quinn. And if you look at like even in the old Batman animated series, he's very abusive. And it's weird because I know like he's going through a lot of evolutions in the comics from being like he started off as a killer and then he kind of became more of a ridiculous clowny character, and then like around 70s and 80s he went back to being this dark character because the book was getting dark. But it's weird because like I as a comic fan, I guess maybe like now that I've actually like dealt with in real life the ramifications of what like a sociopath does to the people around them, like I never dealt with somebody who's like cutting into somebody or like, but like psychologically tormenting people. It makes it so much harder to enjoy a movie now where someone's like really over the top doing it, because I'm like, oh god, this brings up a lot of thoughts about
it's very
like
triggering. I'm sure.
Yeah, not even like, I mean, like it's a little, it's not even like a full-on trigger, it's just more like, oh, I can't escape in this anymore. It's like
you're like, this isn't fun to watch, this just reminds me of things that I didn't like.
Exactly, like, oh, I remember a lot of my friends having a really hard time for a while because of things like this.
People like, and this
All right, good night. No. The other thing I was gonna say, the wonderful trope of a man having to save a woman happens over and over.
Oh
and
my
over
god,
again.
She's so much a damsel in distress for someone who should be like, she's like a war area photographer, and yet somehow she can't keep herself safe.
Right.
Oh yeah, I love the scene where he's going through her portfolio. He's like, this sucks. Oh look, a body.
Yeah.
Like, I like that.
I'm dark. Like, he seems like an emo kid who's trying to tell you how dark he is.
It's
I'm
so weird,
brooding.
Because this was like supposed to be like the gritty Batman reboot, but it's like extremely campy, but everyone is also horny. Like that seems like it's not really like that gritty. You're like, there's some art deco and everyone wants to fuck, and like that's dark. And
I do like that Vicky Vale has sex with Bruce Wayne on the first date. I'm just like, yeah, girl, you get
you know
it.
What?
If you want it, you go get it. And no one will think any less of you.
But then he kind of blows her off.
He does just like, treat her like a dick. On, and in the scene when he like goes to apologize to her and like come out as Batman, this really fun thing happens where she's like calling him out for being a dick and like, you lied to me, blah blah blah, and then he pushes her down onto the couch and's like, I'm just going to need you to shut up right now. Because did you know that when a man needs to express his feelings and be vulnerable, he has to commit an act of domestic abuse first?
He's like, yeah, all right, now I'm real. All warmed up.
I've pushed you. I've told you to shut up. I've yelled at you. Now I can tell you that I'm Batman.
And then he doesn't do it. That's the thing. He talks all tough. That's like he has a sudden moment of like machismo and bravado. Like, I'm going to push you down and tell you what's up. And then he just like flounders through, like, you know, people are, so, you know, when a person's like doing a thing and then you put on a pair of tights and you fight villains and you know, when people do stuff like that. Like, it's like suddenly, like, why make you be this dickish, like, domineering guy for a second if you're not even gonna do anything with it? Like,
and then she kind of drops it. Like, she, there's like that line where she's like, can't we ever love each other?
Yeah.
And then I was like, grow up. Kim, Vicky, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, oh, we haven't, I didn't know if you were like saving this for a special moment, but the scene at the end where you know, Vicky gets a look in her eyes, she's in the Joker's arm, and I'm like, this is her moment. She's gonna do something great. And then what she does is almost gives him a blowjob so Batman can whack him. I was like, no, that was your chance. And then she just starts going like,
yeah, she's like kissing his arm,
and like his shoulder.
Yeah. She's kissing his shirt.
I love purple. And then like sinks down to like, I guess, pretend to start giving him a blowjob.
I was laughing so hard.
Oh my God, it's so ridiculous.
Because she was just very gingerly kissing his shirt, and you could just tell he was like rock hard out of nowhere. <It's> nasty.
No, I was not saving that for a special moment, and I'm glad you brought it up. I almost forgot about it.
He, like, falls for it so hard. And, and then she lunges at him, like, I love purple. And he's like, oh.
A very similar scene happens in Aladdin, where Jasmine starts seducing Jafar.
Yeah.
Because she knows that Aladdin is there to, again, go rescue her. Because did you know, women can't fend for themselves ever. They always have to be saved.
Jafar's kind of hot, though.
And it's also that thing.
Is he? No, he's
I would hook up with Jafar.
It's also like that same mentality that always makes like bad comic artists draw women with like no armor whatsoever, and it's like, and they always go, oh well, they're scantily clad because that way in the heat of battle men will be so turned on by their bodies they won't be able to fight them. Like, it's like the
someone said that is
a frequent argument. Like, whenever you see like a female character who has like an exposed chest plate or like just has like a push-up bra made out of metal or whatever, there's always some argument that's like, oh, it's designed to distract men. And like, everyone's like, you know, that in the heat of battle, like, no one's really thinking about their dicks at that moment, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're all like pretty like revved up and ready to fight. They're not going to stop and go, oh well, I want to have sex with this person, so I will stop fighting now.
Like, I'm like, all for using men's horniness against them, but the battlefield is not the place.
No, it's probably not going to work there.
But considering these plots, we have this whole like, oh, in the middle of you having your victory, I'm gonna suddenly seduce you. Like really, he's like holding her hostage in a bell tower after being pursued by Batman, and he's probably gonna be like, yeah, I mean,
I love
your
purple.
Job is to blow me, so let's do it. Like,
I love purple.
You do love purple, so let's do this. Like,
and then
I have some Prince music
like,
to play.
She goes down, like, she makes a whole. And then Batman says something quippy.
He's like, do you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Which is such a creepy thing to be like, oh, hey, here's the thing that you said to my parents when you killed them. I'm going to say it while my girlfriend's getting all grindy on you.
Right. And very, like, a very long thing to say before you hit someone.
Yeah.
He could have, you know, maybe moved.
That part of this movie bugs me a lot because it's just, like, an example of how this is not very good storytelling. Because Joker... I think it's in Vicky Vale's apartment. He's like, do you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? As he's like holding a gun to Bruce Wayne. He's like, what did you say? He's like, oh, it's just something I say to all of my prey. First of all, it's not, because we haven't seen this happen on screen yet. So what are you talking about? And then
he doesn't do that any other time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they flash back to the one time he said it. Yeah.
So the flashback happens after that. And then only then do we realize why that is significant. So it's just like, no, you gotta be a better screenwriter, dude. Like, this isn't good storytelling.
And it's also, that's one of the things that's not even from the comics. Like, it is not the Joker that killed Bruce Wayne's parents in the comics. And that's one of those things that people were real mad about when they, like, did it.
Yeah.
Like, I think for this, like, movie isolated, it makes sense. Because otherwise, like, what connects Batman and the Joker besides the fact that they're, like, both horny but not in love with Kim Basinger?
Yeah.
But... I don't know. Yeah, it's just
gross. The Joker also had that like weird long dick gun that he pulled out of his pants at one point. Yeah. I'm like, that's not a useful weapon.
Yeah, I always loved that as a kid, though. I don't know why. I think I wanted that. Like, and then like, I think it doesn't even have the bang flag at the end of it at some point. Or like,
yeah.
Well, back to what women are wearing in comic book movies. There are at least three different times where Vicki Vale is wearing high heels that she has to take off because she's either fleeing or just needing to move about more comfortably. And sure, women can wear whatever they want, but high heels were designed by men and the patriarchy to slow women down when men want to chase them and assault them. I'm guessing. I don't know that that's what happened, but like, look, these are not sensible footwear.
You can outrun a T-Rex in heels, so let's not act like.
I'm also wearing my high heel Playboy sneakers today. So.
I'm also wearing my high heel boots, but I
or
could
just
run
be
in
like,
them.
Hey, please attack us.
I'm wearing high heel boots, sort of.
Yeah.
Not as high, but there's a heel to them.
Well, we're killing it.
We are.
I mean, we gotta be fly. Yeah.
I just think that if she knows that there's a Joker around, maybe wear some more footwear
even
to run away.
Just for
it's the 80s.
Job.
Reeboks were really popular. Get some Reeboks.
Like,
yeah.
If you're
it's
an investigative photographer, you probably wouldn't wear that.
Probably not.
Like, I totally get it when she's at the Wayne Mansion for the gala and she's wearing her weird prom dress, wedding dress thing has with the poofy sleeves. It's like a white dress. Like,
in any other party, it would be like, you're overdressed. Like, you look like Glinda the Good Witch.
We haven't even talked about my favorite scene, which is when Batman asks Vicki Vale how much she weighs.
Yeah.
Which, that alone does not bother me, because people have this whole thing where it's like, never ask a woman how much she weighs. Never ask a woman how old she is, because that basically just implies that if a woman weighs too much or if she's too old, she should be ashamed of herself and she should feel shame, which is not true at all, obviously. But what bothers me is that after that, after like the whole fight scene, and he comes back around and he's like, oh, you weigh a little bit more than 108.
Yeah.
Which, number one, most adults do.
Yeah.
That would be horrible if she weighed 108. Yeah. She'd be very sick.
Yes. Two, way to body shame her for no reason. And three, if she did lie about her weight, it's only because women have to adhere to such impossible standards for beauty.
Yep,
and
Batman, why don't you take on the patriarchy instead of the Joker?
Seriously.
Exactly.
Again, if you could open two factories and you could also take down, you can open a news network that focuses on
women centric issues.
Yeah. Why don't you start a magazine, Bruce?
Yeah.
So yeah, that that was my favorite thing to happen in the movie.
Yeah, it's like sometimes I'm like, do you even like her? Like, why are you being real mean?
He does not treat her especially well, either as Batman or as Bruce Wayne.
No.
Yeah, like he lies to her, he blows her off, he calls her fat. Like, I was just like, why do you guys, Vicky, come on, have
you
some
you can do
pride.
Better. Yeah. Seriously.
She must because she's not back in the sequel, so.
Right.
True. She just finds
she
like
goes
a,
off.
Someone nice.
Just like in Kill Bill, whenever she was dating that murder Bill guy, and then she's like, you know what? I'm just going to settle down with this record store owner in Texas.
Like a loser. Yeah.
Well, because she has a baby.
Right. And you just have to put everything on hold whenever you have children.
You can't be an assassin when you have a baby. No. I like the idea of somebody who I like Kill Bill a lot, but I do like the idea of somebody who's like an international assassin. They'd be like, oh, but I can't raise a kid as one. Like, I get the idea like she like flipped, but still. Yeah.
Yeah. Those were all the things that I found.
My favorite moment is when,
interesting.
Like, the Joker and Batman are, like, bickering all the time, and there's, like, a part where he's like, you made me. Well, you killed my parents, so you made me first, so you made me, and then I made... It's like this... I'm like, really? No one at the script was like, maybe we should do another pass in this scene. Like, let's go ahead and do this again. No? Okay.
We could just save some time, because the movie is, like, a little bit too long.
It's a little over 2 hours. Yeah. And then there's no need for that.
No. Although I do, the Joker is fun when he's not abusing women. Like when he's, which is that true about a lot of sociopaths. But like when he comes in and he's like giving out money and like dancing in the street and like
when
like
he singing, dances, I love him.
And I just like that. Like when he's dancing, giving money. Like the idea is that he's like taking over this like bicentennial festival that like they were able to cancel.
Right.
And I just like that there's apparently no actual police force in this city because, like, he's not
he's just rolling
down the street with giant balloons, handing out money, and no cops are like shooting the balloons or doing anything to stop him. And they don't know there's gas in the balloons yet. So it's like, there's actually no, it doesn't make any sense why, like, the whole city's like, yeah, this guy just murdered a bunch of people and is. Been terrorizing us
and has like gone on TV and being like, hey, I'm poisoning all of your beauty products, watch out for me.
But there are six cops on the scene who are willing to shoot at Vicky.
Yeah.
Like, they show up at very strange moments.
Well, are those cops or are those his weird security guards?
Oh, maybe they were security
people. I thought they were cops too. I'm like, wait, no, it might be his people.
There are no cops in this movie.
No.
There's a bunch of weird, like, henchmen that attack Batman. Like, one just does, like, a bunch of flips across the bell tower.
I loved the flippy guy. He was cool. But, I mean, yeah, whenever Jack Nicholson was dancing, I was like, I'm in. And then he would, hit a lady, and I'd be like, oh, that's why I don't like this guy.
Yeah.
Oh, he is a jerk.
Oh, love a dancing man, though.
Well, that's why Harley Quinn needs to be a Poison Ivy instead of a Joker, because she's not abused.
Mm-hmm.
They'd
be so good for each other.
They are good for each other.
I wonder how Lego Batman is going to fare in terms of its treatment of its Lego lady characters.
I can't wait to rip down the gender inequalities of Lego Batman.
As of yet, I haven't seen one that exists in the previews. I literally only see Will Arnett's Batman and Alfred. That's like the only two characters that seem to be in the previews. So
I got to rewatch the trailer.
Is there another female character in the Lego movie besides Olivia Wilde's like cool like...
There's the cat unicorn thing, right? Is that what's her face voices? Who's in Community? Allison Brie.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also like the off-screen little sister that has to also be allowed to play with toys. Like that's the only other.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other female character.
Yeah, let's do the Lego Movie next.
Oh my God.
Have you seen it?
I watched it with a baby once.
Oh. Well,
my friend.
I tried to watch it on a plane and I couldn't do it. And then I watched it again later on HBO and I liked it more. But like, I think being in front of it on a plane, it was like, it was just too fast. And like, okay, I can't handle this right now. Like,
I can't watch stuff on planes.
Yeah. So Batman. Sorry.
Does anyone else have any final thoughts or closing words?
This movie hates women. Like, it really does. Like, everyone who dies is a woman except for, like, Bruce's... A couple of the guys in the beginning, like, the mob guys who get killed and Bruce's dad. But, like, everyone the Joker kills.
Oh, the guy who gets, like, burnt to a crisp and, like, doesn't ever think to maybe take his hand away from Joker's handshake. And he's like, no, I'm just going to let myself burn to death.
Yeah, he was freaked out, okay?
Oh, sure.
Is that weird?
In the moment.
Where the Joker's like, I'm glad you're dead. Yeah, because you killed him. Like, we all get that you're glad he's dead. Like, why would we not think he was glad that he was dead?
Can I read Tim Burton's quote about white people that's bad?
Yes.
Because it's like...
Oh, it's really bad.
Comically bad, yeah. Okay, so this was after the Miss Peregrine's... Does anyone see his movies anymore? Anyways.
No.
Nowadays, people are talking about it more. It meaning racial equality. But things either call for things or they don't. I remember back when I was a child watching the Brady Bunch and they started to get all politically correct. Like, okay, let's have an Asian child and a black. I used to get more offended by that than just, I grew up watching blaxploitation movies. And I said, that's great. I didn't go like, okay, there should be more white people in these movies. I was just like, I can't imagine him saying that, first of all, like, not stuttering.
Yeah.
Because that's just, like, such an insane line.
He must be just
thought.
So sheltered and weird.
Yeah, it's like, congratulations on your easy life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone pointed out, and I remember talking about it when that movie came out, how, like, for as much as Tim Burton, like, prides himself on being this director who writes about like films movie about outsiders and unique weird, they're all really just a version of Tim Burton. Like every Scissorhands literally is Tim Burton, like with like scissory hands.
I'm
like,
weird.
Yeah.
I'm weird, why doesn't anyone want to kiss me?
He eventually found someone,
but she left him,
but she bailed on him.
He had one that he cheated on and then one that left him, so
I'm weird.
Let's talk about whether or not this movie passes the Bechdel test.
No!
It doesn't!
No!
It does not.
I don't think there's even a scene where two women with speaking roles are even in the same room together.
I don't think so.
I think that Vicky and then the girl with the Phantom of the Opera face are both in the same scene at one point.
You're right.
They both speak, but not to each other.
Yeah.
What scene is that?
In the art gallery, when the Joker's like showing her.
Oh,
her face.
And she's like, I thought you were going to let me watch you improve your art.
Yeah.
Right, but she only talks to him because I was like, maybe it'll, but no, it fails. It's a big fat fail.
Yeah, doesn't pass the Bechdel test. Not
I bet
surprisingly,
Joel Schumacher's does.
I bet it doesn't at all.
I bet it
but
does.
But we can
I don't think
watch
it, does.
It.
No.
Which one, Batman Forever or Batman and Robin?
Batman Forever, I think, only has one woman in it. It has two women that I can think of off the top of my head. One of them is Nicole Kidman's character, who's like a psychotherapist.
That's
and there's
true.
Also this lady who's like the gossip columnist for Gotham. And she's in both Batman Forever and Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
And she's like, we're talking to Bruce Wayne. Bruce is Gotham's most eligible bachelor, like that kind of lady. And then Elle McPherson is Bruce Wayne's girlfriend in Batman and Robin. And then Uma Thurman is that one actually might only because it has Batgirl and Poison Ivy.
Alicia's,
so there might be a scene where those two are fighting and talking about it. I think even then, I think that line is the line where it's like, well, I tell a lady phrases, I pull the plug. So I think that she's still talking to Batgirl about Batman and Robin. So
Schumacher. The Phantom of the Opera absolutely passes it. All the ballerinas are chatting all the time. About every witch
Good
thing.
For that.
We should talk about it sometime.
We can. I'm very confused about your movie taste sometimes, Jamie.
It's bad. Here's the thing. It's bad.
Oh, the way we conclude every episode is to rate the movie in the context of its treatment of female characters on a scale of 0 to 5 nipples. I'll go first. I give this movie 1/2 of a nipple. Because and it's the nipple from I think George Clooney's costume.
Yeah, the Schumacher nip.
Schumacher nip. So it's that one.
That movie, like the nipple and like butt shot bat suit thing. That's the very first set of shots in that movie. Like there's like literally nothing happening yet, and you just get a bunch of really close up shots of like everything homoerotic about their suits.
I kind of like that they're sort of objectifying those men male body parts.
Like there's even like literally a shot where like they just like they both had their own version of it where they just put their butt towards the camera and like you just it's like a fine butt shot.
Nice. I have to rewatch those, but do I? I don't know.
I think if you went on YouTube, you could probably find just that sequence real quick.
Joel Schumacher also directed "Kiss from a Rose" music video by Seal. Great video, great
it's
song.
It's a tie-in to Batman Forever.
Caitlin's actually gonna murder me.
I know. I think maybe one of the first movies I saw of his was Falling Down, which was an interesting premise, but not well executed. Yeah, you heard it here first.
Leave
Caitlin
Joel
Durante's hot
alone.
Takes about falling down. Jamie, what do you rate this movie on a scale of 1 to 5 nipples?
I give it Michael Keaton's left nipple, which I imagine is hairless and has never been hard.
Mm. So one nipple?
Yeah.
Okay. How about you, Riley?
I think I will give it a half nipple as well, because at least it has women in it.
Yeah.
And like
yeah,
one of them has a job. Like those two women that have jobs. Three, because there's two newscasters and there's Vicky Vale. So
oh,
really
and those
only
supermodels, they have jobs too.
That's true, but they're not really in it. Like they're only in it as corpses. So I don't count them as being in it. Like they're literally in it as photos of dead women. And then there's also this weird creepy scene where the Joker's like talking about his products and he has like a picture of their dead body with the mask going, love that Joker, which is so creepy.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't give it more than 1/2 nips. And I think the nip that I'm going to go with is, boy, whose nipple do I want to give it? I'm going to give it Billy Dee Williams' nipple because he gets the shaft and later, because for your beloved Joel Schumacher decides we can't have Billy Dee Williams play Two-Face. He has to replace him with Tommy Lee Jones. So he's like, oh, we need a white Southern guy to play this character.
Thank you for calling him my Joel Schumacher, though. That did feel right.
Riley, where can people find you online, follow you on Twitter, stuff like that?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Rye Silverman on Twitter, and I am RileySilverman.com, and I have a new podcast myself that's coming out. It may not be out by the time this episode airs, but it will be soon, and it's called The Puppy Episode, and it is a podcast that is a retrospective of the Ellen DeGeneres sitcom from the 90s where she came out as gay. So it's three queer ladies talking about what it's like being queer in 20 years later and what it was like when we were younger when that show came on and like what it's like since then. So it's interesting, I think, and it should be fun to do.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Jamie.
You can find me on the internet at Hamburger Fun. You can find me at Joel Schumacher's house outside waiting.
Oh, and I forgot to mention, I write for a podcast called International Waters. I always forget to promote it because I'm not on the podcast, but I write it.
Oh, is that Dave? Oh,
cool. Yeah, Dave Holmes is the host, and it's an international panel show that depicts American comedians versus British comedians in a pop culture battle royale. And I write for it. I'm writing for it about 9 months, and I love writing for it. But I always forget to promote it when I'm on shows. But it's a great show, so listen to it. It's fun. It's twice a month. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your stalking.
I'm so mad. Yeah. I have a cartoon up on Cafe every week as well.
They're very funny.
Thank you.
Are they all about scissoring?
Thank you. They have been about scissoring in the past.
You should follow the Bechdel cast on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
At Bechdel cast.
That's true. Like and subscribe.
You can rate us on iTunes. We're on also, I think, Google now in addition to iTunes.
Aristotle.
So check us out. Yeah. Shout out to Aristotle.
I did a little Oprah there.
And you can email us too if you want. If you have any, like, I don't know, questions or comments or contributions.
Or pictures you drew of us.
Pictures you drew of us.
Hanging out.
Scissoring together.
I was going to say it. I didn't want to be the one to say it.
I could make one if you're comfortable.
I've never been more comfortable of anything in my entire life.
Okay, good.
And you can follow me at Caitlin Durante. And I think that is it. Riley, thank you so much for being here and talking about Batman with us.
Thanks for having me.
And have a good time, everyone. Go see Lego Batman. Also, thanks, panties. Sponsor us. We need your sponsorship if you want.
Oh, Caitlin's going in on this hard.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you said thanks. I thought you said thanks, panties.
Oh, no.
I was like, yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks, underwear, for making me not naked.
You're there for us.
The period panties. Yeah. Thanks.
My closing thing is give 2004 Phantom of the Opera another chance. You will not regret it.
Cool.
Bye.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.